was working out this morning, and I like to listen to music when I work out. And you know, Apple has those curated lists, new music, your new music list for the week, and it changes every week. So I guess they're trying to introduce you to similar things you're already listening to. And my daughters, we all share the same Apple Music account. So they're listening to their own music all the time. So I don't know whether my curated lists are like geared towards me or geared towards like a 12-year-old girl. And I can actually understand how it would think that it would be for me because I tend to, it's like teen pop for you. Which could legitimately be for me.
Yes.
Because I don't know, there's something about that type of music that I like. Guilty
Yeah.
pleasure.
I
Call it guilty pleasure, but it's so
love it.
funny. But Apple Music is funny because they have a playlist for literally everything that you might be doing in a during a day. It's like brushing your teeth playlist, get up playlist, morning coffee playlist.
That's overboard.
Oh my
That
God.
literally, you could just pick a
You
playlist every
could. And
day
it's like,
and you
oh,
listen to a
well,
different one
what
every
does
day.
Apple think that I should be doing while I'm washing the dishes? Playlist. Checking email playlist.
Stop. What's on
No.
the. Okay, I need an example.
Okay, let me click in here and let's see what's in here. There's a Marshmello and Halsey track in here.
Nice.
Shawn
That's.
Mendes and Justin
Wait.
Bieber.
Wait. That's your checking email? That's their checking email suggestion? How are you supposed to check your email while Marshmello's playing? That's very
I don't
distracting.
know.
Welcome to the Violacentric Podcast. We are two curious violists creating a safe place to have authentic and challenging conversations in the professional music world. I'm Liz.
And I'm Steph. Let's jump in the deep end. What are you watching these days?
Well, we just finished part one of season four of Ozark.
Oh, okay.
That show is so fascinating. We binged it during the pandemic. We had not watched it before that and caught up to season three. And then we're in the mass of people waiting for season four to come out because it's literally been years since they've had another season. I've told you about this. The show is so dark, and even the music is like ominous leading tones just held out in tension for like endless periods of time. And basically, every episode, you're waiting for crap to go down. You're just waiting for it. But it's so well done. Like, the characters are so amazing. I know you haven't watched it, so I won't talk too much about it. But Laura Linney is one of the main characters, and she's a brilliant, brilliant actor, of course. Her character, she's complicated. But she's pretty irredeemable. Like, she's pretty evil. She's one of the protagonists. So it's a fascinating dichotomy. I'm not rooting for her. I'm rooting for her to fail, but she's at the center of the show. Well, if any of our listeners who are Ozark fans, I found a really great article. I don't remember where it was, but I'll post a link. And she talks about her character and she talks about Wendy Bird as like a person. And I just love reading that when you get an actor's perspective on what they're doing because you're thinking to yourself, like, she must know how horrible this person is. She must know and how hard it would be to consistently go in there and play this role. And it gave me some good perspective. So now we're just waiting, waiting, waiting until the second half, which, according to the interwebs, they split the season in half so that they could qualify for two award seasons.
Oh, that's so typical.
Jerks. So ridiculous. Anyway, that has been an intense ride. And so to balance that out, we are in the midst of season two of Ted Lasso.
Oh, she's watching it. It's so
Yes.
good, right?
It's so good. It's literally the opposite of Ozark.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. You got to balance it out.
Yes. It's like, I don't know, salve for the soul. All the feel goods. And it's funny.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Jason Sudeikis, so good.
Yes. He's so good. How about you?
Oh my gosh. So I just started this documentary that just popped up on my recommendations. So this will tell you like what kind of stuff I watch on Netflix. It's this documentary. It's called The Tinder Swindler.
Oh my God.
I was doing my cardio exercise. We have a exercise machine that we bought during the pandemic. So I was doing that. I'm only 20 minutes in, but I gather that it's about this person on Tinder who scams women.
Yes, it seems that way.
I mean, it's, yeah. And they're painting the picture of this guy seemed perfect
They always do.
and rich and handsome. blah, blah, blah. So I don't know what the twist is. But oh my gosh, podcasts. There's this podcast that I love that grew out of another podcast that I love. The podcast is called Maintenance Phase, and it's all about diet culture and just how messed up our whole society is with weight loss, body image. The hosts do deep dives into a particular diet, a particular book, whatever, and like break it apart and be like, okay, this is completely unfounded. This is a total scam. So they did this latest episode on this Australian influencer named Belle Gibson. Oh my gosh, I don't want to spoil anything for you guys, but you need to go listen to this episode because it's so good. It's so good. If you're into that kind of thing, I want to give credit to Eric Heckscher, who I know listens to this podcast. Thank you so much, Eric. We both love you.
Oh my God, it's Eric's first official shout out.
Yes, we love you. We love that you love this podcast. Oh, it makes us so happy. But anyway, he recommended this podcast called You're Wrong About, which has been around for multiple years and has these two fantastic hosts. And one of the hosts broke off and started this maintenance phase podcast. So that's another great one. If you want a catalog of just like basically things in history that you thought you knew about, but that you really don't know the true story of. And they're hilarious and great writers and great researchers. So You're Wrong About and Maintenance Phase. But the latest Maintenance Phase was like, oh my God, so good.
So, do you feel comfortable sharing any of your how you feel post audition world? It's far removed now, but
Yeah, I'm firmly in post audition life. And I posted something on my Instagram that might give kind of a clue. I did a reel that was about how I'm ready to take another audition. And it's because I had just such a good experience doing it. I mean, said no one ever. I did not advance and win the job, but I really feel like I had a breakthrough, as I alluded to in our talk before the last one, in my preparation for the audition. So I felt very comfortable on stage. I felt like I played great. Certain circumstances were not in my favor. Just the weather was really dry and my instrument is very finicky. So I think that before I go into another one, I might want to put myself in that kind of situation again or just be aware of that possibility. But anyway, all told, I feel great about it. I feel like it was a really positive step forward in the way I feel about my own playing. I'm like, who am I really doing it for?
Yeah, it's very cool. I love it. I can apply this to other areas of my life. You know, when I think about complicated situations and just reframing them, it's not easy work, but it is possible.
And how's this for a segue? And just like how we're reframing things in our mind, our guest, Luke Fraser, is trying to reframe the entire orchestral model.
Excellent pivot.
Thank you. Every once in a while, it just kind of lays itself out. But Luke is seriously an innovator in reimagining what orchestras are doing and should do and what their role should be in the community. And you know what? He's got all the facts to back it up, all the figures, all the stats. And he's a dynamic, exciting person to talk with.
Oh my gosh. The dynamic is like an understatement. It's just one really well thought out philosophy after another. And there's so much information behind it that it's hard to argue with. I am really excited to see if we have any response from listeners because Luke is passionate about what he believes and he has a lot of conviction and it's powerful. And I really think he makes incredibly compelling points about our future as a field, classical music in particular, and where it belongs in our current day. It's a really, really relevant and important question that we have to keep asking ourselves and looking for answers to as we keep going into hopefully post-pandemic life. He's amazing. And the thing is, he's so funny and just easy to talk to. And we always just have so much fun working with him. And so it's a real treat to share him with all of you who listen to us because really it's like infectious. I think he's infectious.
Totally. And you all know that we perform with Luke and the American Pops Orchestra. There is an American Pops PBS special coming out on March 6th. So you can see Luke in action on PBS. Check your local listings. It's a completely learner and low program. So for you Broadway heads out there, you're going to love it. It was so fun to put together. The guest artists were amazing.
Yeah, for sure. It's a really unique experience all around. And I also want to say, you know, we picked up ever so slightly the audition talk again with him. And he shared his model for auditions with APO, which I thought was really interesting to hear. And it is different from what we have traditionally in symphonic orchestras. Now, of course, in that case, you can have a discussion about the structure of the ensemble itself and what your purpose is as a musician in it. And I think most symphony orchestras would say, well, in terms of repertoire, like there are needs that the orchestra has that maybe APO doesn't have. But it did get me thinking about the audition process in general. And you and I have been having interesting conversations about various orchestral auditions that have happened in recent times. I would say in the last 6 months or so. And I think it's really interesting to note that all of those jobs, we know of three full-time orchestral jobs that came up for audition in the last 6 months. Two of those jobs had multiple openings. And all of those orchestras chose not to hire for all of their vacancies. In one case, I think there were two or three vacancies in a full-time orchestra in the same section. They didn't hire anyone who came to audition for them. And I just want to ask the question, like, why? Why?
Really? All of those people who came, you couldn't find one that could do the job?
What is the criteria that is keeping you from hiring someone on that audition? There's no way that there aren't highly qualified musicians playing their butts off in those auditions. There's no way. So what is the criteria? And I'm just asking it because I think this is an important conversation to have. You're already talking about a massively reduced job market for all of these musicians taking these auditions. So instead of giving that opportunity to a musician who comes and plays their butt off for you, you're not going to hire anyone. It's crazy making to me. I'm speaking for our community of musicians who are going out there and really working their tails off to play to this level of perceived perfection that is somehow still not met. It's still not met. What is good enough?
100% agree.
Hot takes.
Whoa.
Getting spicy.
Get your oven mitts on because there's a lot of hot takes happening in this episode.
This episode is spicy.
Oh, get your glass of milk ready because you're going to need to quench things after listening to this one.
We love our spice.
Enjoy this episode and our conversation with Luke Frazier of the American Pops Orchestra. And please give us some feedback. We want to know what you guys think. What did you love? What really pushed your buttons? Because we all need to stir things up a little bit. So let us know what you think and enjoy this episode. Hello all, Liz and Steph here. As you know, Liz and I choose our sponsors because we really and truly value authenticity. We can talk most easily about things that we love and use regularly, which is why Potter Violins is such a natural partnership.
Yes, Steph and I both have been taking our violas to Potter's for years because we know they're a shop that really knows about violas. Their luthiers are some of the best in the country, and I trust them completely with my wooden baby.
And not only that, but I'm actually bow shopping right now, which can be overwhelming. But I always go to Potter's first because I trust them to help me find the perfect one for my instrument and playing style.
Yep, both Steph and I found our violas there. Bottom line is that we both love the Potter's team, and we're thrilled to welcome them as a Season 2 sponsor. If you're interested in learning more about what they offer, you can find them at pottervioolins.com and at Potter Violins on Instagram. As a teacher, one of my main goals is to get each of my students set up for success right from the start. And part of that process is trying to find the shoulder rest solution that gives each of them freedom of movement and provides for tension-free playing.
Yes, but I always feel like I'm jerry-rigging one solution or another by adding extra pads or making a fussy ad hoc version to fit a student's body.
Totally. That's why I was so excited to learn that there are arc rests in different sizes, even one for my youngest students, itty-bitty violas and violins. It's called the Shoulder Buddy, and it's basically the cutest thing you have ever seen.
Oh my gosh, you guys, it comes in colors. So now your students can pick their favorite color and get a simple shoulder pad solution that will set them up for long-term comfort and a great sound, since we all know that those tiny instruments could use all the resonance help they can get.
If you're a teacher and are interested in having a few on hand to try with your students, reach out to Erin and Tigran at thearcrest.com or you can also find them on Instagram at The Arc Rest. That's TheArcRest. Conductor Luke Frazier is the visionary behind the American Pops Orchestra, which he started back in 2015 to present a broad array of popular and classical music in innovative ways to bring new audiences into the orchestral world. Each year, Luke hosts free elementary school tours as well as APO's Next Gen Vocal Competition in an effort to create new opportunities for the next generation of music makers and music lovers. In addition to his work with APO and PBS, Luke is the inaugural Principal Pops Conductor for the National Philharmonic. He maintains a crazy busy schedule as a guest conductor, clinician, speaker, and panelist for orchestral and educational organizations across the country. Luke believes that the future of orchestral music is breaking down barriers between orchestras and audiences. Personally, Steph and I both can speak for Luke's incredible energy that he shares with the musicians that he works with. We have been so fortunate to be members of the American Pops Orchestra since its inception, and we could not be more thrilled to share your voice with our listeners today, Luke. We're so excited that you're here.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. You know I love both of you, so anything you need from me ever, I'm here.
You were just the absolute best.
Love you.
So we have so many things we could talk with you about, and I know that it's just going to be such a fun conversation. We wanted to maybe get started just by asking you a little bit about you as a human being, your background. We know that you grew up in rural West Virginia. Whatever you want to share about that, we'd love to hear about it.
Well, I first developed my love of music in two ways. One, through my public school music teacher in elementary school, who I still stay in touch with, Kathy Dawson at Lubeck Elementary. You know, our music class was out in one of those portables, so basically a double-wide trailer pulled up next to my elementary school, which is still there, by the way. And, you know, she would sit at the piano and we'd sing these songs. And I can remember sitting in class and getting so excited. That was when Pocahontas came out and we were singing the music along from Pocahontas and crying in the back room at Colors of the Wind as a young environmentalist, I suppose. But, and learning, you know, in the next room over was the band room, which was the other half of the trailer where I started on trumpet. But really a big part of my background was in the church. And I, from a young age, would want to go up and sing with the choir next to my grandmother, and I'd want to see the pianist play. And starting around age 12, I actually was my church pianist. And so every Sunday, I was leading, and I'm using my air quotes, leading the congregation in their singing. So almost conducting from the piano from that age. Mm. And also simultaneously learning what pieces people like to hear and why they like to hear them. And also, why in the world did you play that song? I hate that. And you know, there's nothing honest than a congregation. Yeah. Amen. They don't care if you're 14. They're going to tell you that. So. And then I went to music school and I started out as actually a triple major, believe it or not, in piano performance, French horn performance, and music education. And after my first semester, I decided that I didn't want to be in a classroom every day. It's a different focus. And my very best friend in the whole world is a public school teacher in Winchester. And whenever I can go out and do things for her school for free and so much for outreach touring, that is, you cannot think about anything else but your classroom. Mm. My opinion is for great music teachers, that's the best ones, is who they eat, sleep, drink, and breathe those kids and how they're going to inspire them and excite them. And for me, I just realized that wasn't where I could put my energy. I wouldn't be honest to it. I would always be pulled aside. So I realized that the performance route was for me, and I actually kept up with French horn with piano, ultimately finishing my degree in piano performance, but getting to my exit level in performance on French horn and then literally never picking it up ever again.
Oh my God.
I did it to basically to say I could do it, and I even sold my French horn. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Wow. Were you burnt out, or are you just like, I just know that's not for me?
I'm a very decisive person in every aspect of my life. Mm-hmm. Nothing for me is gray area. I know what I want and I know where I want to go. And then I did a master's in conducting. And one of the blessings I had as well is that I went to two state schools. And I bring that up very much on purpose in that what I love about where I went is on a daily basis, I was interacting with students and community members who did not care about classical music. And the reason I say that is a blessing is because my teachers and my classmates, we spent every single day in the trenches of thinking about no one's protecting this art form for us. No one is saying we're going to insulate you from the cold, harsh reality that not everyone believes what you believe. And so when you realize that at West Virginia University, which I'm a proud alumni and proud supporter of, when you look out your piano studio window and you see the entire stadium pulled, tens of thousands of fans, and you wonder why the recital hall with 300 seats isn't packed, it honestly started to plant a seed in my mind as what can we learn from that? I'm not saying the community is wrong or this is better than that or that is worse than that. We just can learn. And I was lucky to go to school in two places where I had faculty and friends who always thought that way. I remember one conducting recital we did. We decided to program one piece. It was 15 minutes long, and that was it. And we marketed it, and the only thing on the program was a 15-minute one-act piece. And would you believe, I'm sure you will, it was the biggest audience we had for any program that entire year. And so you say to yourself, people do want to be open to this, and they can come. And so I feel like it was a natural outgrowth for me to go on my career where I spend every day thinking about that. Like, how can I tear down the things that get in the way of the love of the art? So anyway, I just talked a lot, but my background leads right into where I am today is the
Oh, it's
takeaway.
incredible. Again, to your point about state schools, in fact, it's making me think about that too with Stephanie and I. We both have that experience as well. And we have sort of like one foot in the real world and one foot in the classical world, you know?
By the way, that's the name of your next
Yeah. This is the title of your episode, Luke.
One foot in the real world with Luke Fraser.
I'm in. I was lucky. I hit my public schools at a time when there was a cohort of teachers that all now have retired, but they were all of a certain age when I was going through junior high and high school. They were all extremely serious about what they did. Many of them would be the state honor group. In fact, in my hometown, the state honor chorus was my high school or the competing high school every year for 10 years. It just alternated back and forth. Our high school band and the other crosstown band, it was like that as well. So I was in a quote bigger area, which by the way, to put this all into reference, in 2022, the average income for a family of four in my hometown is $35,000 in 2022. So we think about in our nation, we've all come, I'm putting air quotes up, it comes such a long way. Well, I think there are a lot of people who would disagree with that. And I think the arts have a way to take us to a different place. And so for me, I certainly felt that. I was at a very fancy DC event recently, and I was telling someone that I never heard professional opera until I was in college. Never ever heard a professional opera singer until I was there. Never saw professional ballet till I was in college. I had never even heard an aria until I was in music school to listen to that kind of music. It just didn't exist. In my high school today, an orchestra doesn't exist. In the Crosstown High School, an orchestra doesn't exist. So I will also say, I think it sets up a fighter mentality in the best way to be like, you know what? I believe this. I love it.
A lot of it is about those teachers. I would also not have a career in music if it wasn't for the people who were teaching music when I was in school. It's incredible.
And a big part of what you're doing right now, Luke, is bringing the music that you experienced in your formative years just by chance. They came into your school to perform for you. But now you are going into the schools to provide music for these underserved communities. So, can you tell us a little bit about how that began and what that looks like?
Yeah, sure. And APO did this virtual national touring and we got to 46 states, which is unbelievable. Do you know APO had a bigger national engaged regular footprint than any of the major orchestras in our country, which is absurd because our budget is, a bucket of wings compared to theirs. $20 in a bucket of wings, that's my favorite comparison.
That's amazing.
So, the way I look at it is this. There is nothing that gets me hot under the collar more than seeing a huge budget orchestra with a huge endowment not serving its community. Period. We wonder why orchestras' audiences are dwindling. We wonder why budgets have to be cut. We wonder why people aren't clamoring to get to an orchestra. Well, if we don't start a pipeline, and if we don't start a pipeline outside of just urban areas, then what do we hope? I also don't believe in this ranking system of American and international orchestras. It's total nonsense. Total nonsense. But anyway, so for me, I looked at it as okay, I am in a major city. I spend most of my time in major cities. and I have a choice with an amount of money. And I said, if I want to put my literal money where my mouth is, then I need to go to the places where orchestras are not serving. And we did extensive research. And when we began, our rule was we would pick counties where the average income for a family of four was under $40,000, which is a shocking amount of counties in Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And I said, we can do this. And it's going to be a big financial commitment. And it is. But you know what? It's worth it. And if we don't do it, literally no one else will. So I view that very seriously. We're gearing up for our next one later this spring. And I also had many people look down on doing a virtual tour. I had other arts leaders in the field say, well, we do digital outreach. No, you play a video for kids. And what we do, as both of you know, is we do live interaction with the kids in real time, before and after the show. We do a live performance in front of them, which we play a wrong note. Actor will miss a line. The point is the kids are getting a real experience. And by the way, the data we collect, 70% of the schools we reach in 46 states never, even pre-COVID, get an orchestral performance each year. Never. So to my point again, there are many other orchestras in this country with far more resources than we get. Despite that, we did more free programming for children around our country than any other orchestra. The other thing APO did during COVID, and we still actually are doing, we sent out kids' musical activity packs to food pantries in very underserved areas. So when we saw COVID begin and food insecurity, which is a major national problem, we said, can we give something that parents can take home along with a box of food when they're feeling ashamed, when they're feeling downtrodden, when they feel like they're not providing for their kids? And can we give something that ties into our mission of music and building community around music and enjoying music? And so we began mailing out thousands of these musical activity packs that Dave Sanders, our principal guitar, who's amazing, created an original album for kids of popular kids' songs in all these fun musical styles. And then we created a puppet stage with little hand puppets that kids could use in their own homes. We provided books for kids from the Ella Fitzgerald Foundation. So it's not only the touring, which is regular touring.
I have been very fortunate to do a bunch of the children's concerts for APO, and I will tell you that in January of 2020 was the first time I did it, I think. And we did the Pied Piper, and we were at Arena Stage, you remember?
Oh, yeah.
And what I remember from that, there are a few things. It doesn't matter what show we're playing. It doesn't matter if we're recording the New Year's special for PBS or we're performing for a group of 50 children. Your energy is so just fun and refreshing and positive, and you make all of us just relax and have a good time, which is not always the case. And I remember that early in that series, it was my first time doing it, and they're usually one on a part, and you have us demonstrate on our instruments for the kids. Like, oh, can you play something warm? Can you play something funny? There's just so many things that you come up with. And I remember back then being like, oh my God, I have to play by myself in front of all these people, in front of my
I think that's what
colleagues.
we all think. We're
Yeah.
like, oh God, what am I going to play? We're classical musicians. We're like,
It's like a panic. Oh my God, I can't make anything up. How am I supposed to do?
there's no music in front of me. What am I going to
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not a jazzer.
So I remember that experience being like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Fast forward to this past December, we did this virtually, and it was the same premise. You had us demonstrate and make things up. And this time around, I didn't have that anxiety. Like, it didn't matter to me what came out of my instrument. I was just going to play. And there is no way that that experience is cultivated without the leader from the top creating it for us so that we feel safe enough that we can do that. And then we become our best expressive selves because of that. And it translates to the kids. I just have to brag about you from our experiences with you because you're just so natural with them. And especially in the Zoom screens, it's fascinating to watch. One day, I don't remember which show it was, but we had like seven separate Zoom screens with 50 boxes. And so there are literally thousands of children are watching live while we do this. And their faces, they're just in the screen. And then during the show, they're like shouting out answers and they're dancing around. And it is such an incredible experience. It fills my cup in every artistic way. And so it's just great to share this because you're absolutely right. Why aren't more organizations taking advantage of the possibilities there? Imagine how many children could be reached.
Yeah.
Here's something I like to say, and I just was interviewed about something. Our children's programming is way off the wall compared to most people's. And I'm told that, you know, there are people that say to me, industry leaders that say, well, it's not a real orchestra that's playing. You've got a quartet and a rhythm section. That's not an orchestra. And my response is, I have something I call my grocery store test for like all orchestra questions in life. If you walk into your public grocery store and you ask these things that most leaders of organizations hold the most dear, most people have no idea, nor do they care. So if you walked into your grocery store, into the produce section, and just walked up to someone and said, what's a symphony versus a philharmonic? They would have no idea. What does chamber music mean? No idea. What is a sonata? And the point is, we can't look down on them. We have to say, I hear you and I see you and you're not less than because of that. But yet with children, we say, well, unless we're playing up on a stage with 80 players, it's not a symphonic experience. And what I want to say from a business standpoint, imagine the amount of money that's paid for one of those concerts. Imagine if instead you hired 5 tours of that, which usually you could at least get 4 or 5 tours out of the amount you're paying for one of those big symphonic experiences. So that 3 or 4 times a year you saw kids, or you go out to 5 regions. And by the way, I'm also not a believer in busing kids into theaters. It's a waste of everyone's time and money because it's hard for teachers to fit it in their schedule. It's expensive and somebody has to cover that cost. It's far cheaper to bus 10 musicians than 1,000 children. And so again, why don't we spend our grant money getting more grants to send musicians into schools and teachers can use them right there? Why aren't we paying more musicians to teach free lessons after school? Can you imagine if you canceled an entire kid's concert and you hired all of your principal players or non-tenured players who need the work, hello, and you said, those of you that love to teach, we will pay you to go teach group classes after school. Like this is, to me, this is basic thinking, but I found that I'm the outlier and it's, quote, revolutionary. But I view it as common business sense as well.
Well, I think that it also is like this whole concept that you just talked about with your outreach programming, but also what Liz talked about with the way that you act and the way that you make a safe space for music to happen. It's all about risk taking. And no growth happens in our comfort zones. And we talked about this before. So this all happens on the periphery of where we're comfortable and what we're used to, which is what I love. And what I think feels the safest about being an APO is that opportunity to take risks. It's a safe place to make creative decisions and just really explore what all the possibilities are for what we're doing.
I wish we as a classical music culture could really lean into that much more heavily. You know, I'm a gambler, I'm a risk taker, and always have been, always will be, because that's where the biggest reward is. The problem is, if orchestras don't start taking bigger risks, we will lose what tiny bit of audience in the margins we have already.
100%.
The other thing that I think is just outrageous, if I hear one more arts leader say, people won't come to our shows, it's because of COVID, people don't, I'm putting up air quotes for those listening.
So many air quotes today.
And by the way, I want to always be the first to tell you I screw up on a daily basis.
Amen.
I do not hold myself to the standard that I have the answers and my life is so much easier. I struggle and I make mistakes every day. But here's what I will point. Facts speak for themselves. So anytime I see friends of mine who attend a pop music concert or an athletic event in Omicron, by the way, not just during COVID, but in Omicron.
Yep.
And I have a symphony leader tell me, oh, people are just nervous about COVID. They're nervous. No, they don't want to see what you're presenting, period. Period. And by the way, the answer is not that we replace classical music with sports. The answer is we get rid of Victorian concepts of programming, concert length, location, timing. The reality is not the music. It never is the problem with the music. You know better than anyone, you two. We've done concerts where we'll play Britney Spears alongside a beautiful art song.
Yep.
You'll look out into the audience and people can get excited about both. It's just when you say a concert has to be 2 hours with an intermission, no thanks. They all don't have to be. When you say you've got to sit a kid in a back row of a theater and expect they're going to stay engaged with the 1812 overture for 2 hours, no thanks. It's irrational. All you got to do is start breaking these things down. You don't want to program a whole chamber concert and wonder why people don't come when it's all obscure 20th century music that, by the way, most of the players don't even care about. So we can take hard looks. We can save what we hold dear. But as long as we have this circular, self-supporting, I am the closest to the true cross of classical music, forget it. Go to your grocery store, have the conversation, music directors, executive directors, and you're going to be in for a stark awakening as to what moves people.
Right. Yeah, you're talking about meeting your community where they are.
Bingo.
And not trying to drag them into what you think they should be listening to.
Well, as you two know so well, I love having awkward conversations about these things with classical or even other conductors of any
Ooh.
genre. I have them on such a regular
You'd be a
basis.
fly on the
Yeah,
wall for those.
I feel like this conversation happens a lot in your life.
Oh my God, it's like wind me up.
You're a pot stirrer, aren't you?
Well, for me, it's like you can call a pot stirrer, you can say I actually care about our audiences.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I just went to go see like a very famous comedian, and my tickets were $90 a seat.
Yeah.
And you happily paid it.
I happily paid it.
There you
Up
go.
right here, same here. I was going to reference this too, Steph. You probably have the same experience because I just went to see
Yeah.
Aziz Ansari
Love
do
him.
stand up at the Anthem. But I have been having this exact thought because I went to that show at the Anthem, which seats like 5,000 people,
Yeah.
and it was sold out.
Yeah.
And that was
Of course it was.
a week and a half ago. And in December, I went to an NFL game.
Of course you
That's
did.
like, what is it? 20,000 people. And both of those shows, I would say our tickets were like roughly $120. Meanwhile, orchestras
Yeah.
canceled our concerts
Yeah.
left and right in January for Omicron.
Here's the thing. It's not as hard as they all make it out to be. Here's the solution. What we first have to do as arts leaders is sit down and say they've got it figured out and we don't. We have to own that and say we don't have the answer and what we're currently doing is failing. I will say one of the things with APO that I have been very willing to do, and any of my staff will tell you, I'm willing to sit down and say, we really screwed that up. That was terrible. I'm not happy with this result. Let's start doing a postmortem about why people didn't come, why this didn't work. We think every day about getting better. Most recently, a good example is every orchestra is saying nobody wants to watch virtual performances. That's over. Nobody wants to do that. Well, guess what? For our college vocal competition, do you know how many people voted last year in the height of COVID when everybody was interested in virtual performance? We had 3,000 people vote, which I was very proud of. That's a big
Yeah.
deal. Do you know how many we had just this past week? 14,000
Wow.
people from across the country. And so you say to yourself, no, people still are willing to participate. You just have to give them something related to them with humanity. Why did Aziz sell out? And why does my show, I can't give tickets away? They're really not that hard when you're willing to look at yourself that critically. And I will say my personality type is I do that to a fault. I get way too hard on myself, and I want it to be better and better and more engaged and more connected. So my constant struggle is to say, it's okay to just be for a minute. It's okay to just be where you are. You don't always have to like be that hard on yourself. So I practice a lot of piano that nobody ever knows about. I practice piano all the time at my house to keep my chops up and to explore new repertoire. And I'm not playing it for anyone, but you would be amazed at
Yeah.
the crazy toxic thoughts that go through my head as I'm practicing that. This is the orchestra culture too. Like, how far are you close to the true cross? Why can't you play at the tempo that Argerich played it? Well, guess what? I don't have her hands. I don't have her life. So I'm going to play at my tempo. And orchestras, if we can't play it like Berlin plays it, then why should we try it? Well, first off, maybe you shouldn't be playing it because your community doesn't want it. And second off, maybe conductor, you shouldn't have picked the piece because your players just don't have that in their fingers. And that's okay. You should pick music your players can play really well and get excited about. As you all know, and I've played for conductors that yell. It's not my philosophy. I hate yelling. I don't like to put players down. And so why don't you pick rep that your players are going to excel on? Challenge them. But you don't always have to pick something that you just want to do or to build your resume so you can get the next quote important job.
It's really like a shift of mindset because, on one hand, you're thinking about how is this experience going to build my career, build me? And the other perspective is, how am I serving my group, my community,
yes.
my musicians, and trusting that by focusing on that, by focusing on the music, by focusing on their experience, that you will all rise together, right?
I made a recent choice in my own career, a very important, distinct choice of things I would not conduct.
Ooh, what's on that
and,
list? I gotta know.
Oh, no, it's a very specific few types of things that would be easy money for me. I could make a lot of money if I agreed to go do them. But I just said to myself, this is not what I believe. Mm. I would rather take the different route that, again, honors what I believe in is the longevity of the orchestral world. I could make the money. I could get to the, quote, famous top, again, air quotes, groups. But guess what? I frequently find that it's more a museum than a place of innovation. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to spend my career trying to be a part of a museum. Pass. I'll move on.
Huge.
That's powerful.
That's the path mm-hmm. I'm choosing.
What continues to come up, and you've been sharing this with us so generously in this conversation, and we knew this already before you talked with us, is this way that you seem to have this vision for what it is that you want. And it's very clear that APO is a reflection of you. Have you always had that sort of like grand vision for what APO was going to be when you first started it? How have your perspectives changed over the years in terms of our projects and what we're doing? I mean, there's just so much there that I think is fascinating for somebody who's considering their own endeavors too.
Well, the first thing I did as a huge mistake in the beginning is that I held up what a concept of an orchestra was compared to what everyone else was doing. Huge mistake.
Uh-huh.
And the way I refer to that, we would always use a huge orchestration number of players in the beginning. We'd hire a big, big, big orchestra. And if it wasn't that, then it's not an orchestra. So for me, one of the biggest pivot points that was, is not, and for many orchestras around our country, a sustainable financial model. You cannot hire a huge amount of players when you're already struggling to get audiences. So big change is I said, let's have more concerts to stay more engaged with our community with smaller number of players. That was a huge mental conceptual shift. And by the way, you guys note that when we started doing that, our audiences and our following and our notice went up astronomically. Mm-hmm. And why? Because we were in their lives more frequently. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, going circling back to the kids concept. Is if we put on one big concert a year, how do we expect they're going to stay related to us throughout a whole year? We need to be there 2, 3, 4 times a year. And in advertising, when you have very limited marketing dollars, here's something that will blow your minds, is that for media, you, of course, get a much better price and volume. So what does that mean? That means that smaller organizations will never get the exposure as large organizations ever. Why would I spend a huge amount of my advertising budget on one ad that maybe will hit the right audience that the organization has told me is the right group? What if instead I took that exact same amount of money and I put it into social media where those dollars are going to reach so many more people, the types of people, and they're going to share it with their friends in a much more organic way. But again, to have the courage to say, I'm not going to put any, by the way, to this point, APO, no matter how big we get, I refuse to put a dollar, even though I can't afford those ads now. I refuse to, because I fundamentally don't believe in the premise that larger organizations should have more power than smaller. So I refuse to do it. It's my one-man boycott. But if you look through all of these things, if you look through the reducing the size, if you look through the fundraising, if you look through the marketing, what is the central theme? The central theme is connecting to people where they are on a more regular basis. Instead of what someone tells me an orchestra is, instead of what some, quote, marketing expert tells me I should do to reach more people. Nonsense. And musically, what I love about our group is that we play all styles all the time. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love that we can play for Joshua Bell on one program and Patti LaBelle. And guess what? More people will get excited about Joshua having been there to hear Patti. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in traditional orchestral marketing, you would never put them on the same evening. Well, maybe we should. What if you made an interesting artistic connection? And that was the regular and not just a one gala night. People don't listen in a vacuum anymore. How many times do you change your streaming service and you swap song to song because you're feeling one thing, or it's just not who we are?
That's great. And APO was something that you built from nothing.
Yeah.
Literally ideas in your brain I should have this performing ensemble, and you built it from nothing.
Yeah.
And now your experience is expanding. You're now the new principal pops conductor for the National Philharmonic, which is a very traditional size and style of orchestra, at least until you've arrived. So I'm interested.
Shaking things up. Yeah. Shaking the best. Things up.
Or something,
so
right?
I'm just curious about in what you've told us about you learning to build APO. Yeah. Are you bringing over to these big orchestras, and how are we going to morph like a traditional orchestra into something a little more flexible?
For sure. I guess conduct in a lot of places. And here's the bottom line. The bottom line makes a difference. And when you say to yourself, okay, it's great to have a theory and a concept and a vision and an endowment. Because, by the way, I always question whether if a lot of orchestras had the endowments taken away, if they'd still be programming the same way. And I think the answer is frequently no. So I always make that comparison to churches, too. You know, you'll have a gigantic church or cathedral and five people will be in it. But the only reason those doors are still open is because, and by the way, grew up in the church, love the church, support the church. But I always question, if our endowment wasn't here, would we be running our services the same way as we are today? Don't know. I always like making these non-musical parallels. So with large groups, to your point, I always am very honest with what I think. And you know, one of the hardest lessons I've learned in my career is to be able to care deeply, give all the advice, be as open-hearted as I can, and then to step back and say, it's not my job.
Yes.
And as the years go on, I predict the next 5 years are going to be a radically transformational period for American orchestras, good and bad. And quite honestly, I think this next fiscal year is going to be a very telling period for most American orchestras because government relief has run out. Mm-hmm. I don't foresee a major financial package coming back. And luckily for APO, we never relied on it. So come, go, it, whatever, we're going to keep doing our thing. And I only bring that up not as a boastful point, but just I'm a big proponent of know all the facts. And especially for donors. I want donors to know when you write a check to an organization, where is it really going? Is it really employing more musicians? Is it really reaching more kids? Or is it paying for offices or more staff in an office rather than more musicians on a stage? You start to draw those parallels and everyone makes priorities. I only say this because I don't think it's bad mouthing to be honest. I don't think it's bad mouthing to just put facts on a screen or in a newspaper and say, okay, this is what we did, and this is why we did it, and this is what we had to support it. And the great news is we're a 501c3, so anyone can go in and look at our records. I have nothing to hide, so that's what I believe.
Yeah.
I'm really shy, I think, has really been the secret to my
That's
career.
My takeaway, I mean.
Yeah, that's...
It's been very hard to get you to open up today. Yes.
I also wanted to start a cooking/talking series called Someone's in the Kitchen with Luke.
Oh, but, I love that.
I have so much free time, as you guys know. It's just really, I'm sitting around for ideas.
Hot takes and cold dishes.
Oh, yes. Believe it or not, I'm very introverted. Like as much as these takes.
Stop.
And no, seriously, I need like days to recover from concerts. Uh-huh. It's true. So, yeah. And my dogs are a big part of that.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big introvert. Liz, not so much.
Well, we love her sparkle and shine.
But she's learning the ways of the introvert.
I am more introverted now than I was 2 years ago. There is no question about it. I've had multiple experiences just in this last month.
Yeah.
Weddings and things like that. And it's highly socialized for days at a time. And I am like the only one in the group who's like, I gotta go to my room and just chill for a minute.
Yes.
Like, I need it now. It's the craziest thing. That never was the case before, but...
I come home, cuddle with my dogs, watch antique shows. That's my other thing is I'm obsessed with antiques outside of music. So that's always fun. Life is all about that inquisitiveness and figuring it out and that introspection. And we get better and we dream deeper. And then you just realize you look at your beautiful dogs and your pets around your life. And you realize at the end of the day, there are much simpler things. We don't always have to think about the big issues all the time. And I don't have to think about the existential crises of orchestras. I can... I can just laugh, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. That's an important thing to say, because especially now, I feel like generally in life, there's so many things for human beings to worry about. There's so many things going on. We're in such a time of flux. It's important to have fun.
Yeah, there was a time there in the like, early pandemic when I was watching the news like all the time. and reading the news. That took up a lot of space in my mind. It was after the election. And I was like, that's not going to be the first thing I check anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not going to look at the front page of the Post. I'm not going to listen to those political podcasts. It has, I think, really helped my mental health and well-being, not spending that mental energy every day on things that I cannot control.
Yes. Well, for me, I find that, as we all do as musicians who make our livelihood as musicians, we live in our head so much of our time. Mm-hmm. We're always thinking, should I have played that phrase that way? Should I have conducted this? Would it have been clearer for the players if I had moved my hand that way? Mm. And I will tell you, that sort of second guessing of things is almost gone. At this point, I feel like I just walk on and I know I'm convicted about how I want to conduct something and it's going to be that. And that's the way it is. And I dream that and blah, blah, blah. But for me, I found that so much of my stress relief, and also tell beyond just the music, I'm constantly mm-hmm. thinking about the bigger picture, the budget, the marketing, and then the future of orchestras, period, on top of that. It's a lot of weight. Mm. And I love listening to the news and foreign policy, and mm-hmm. and I get very anxious. So for me, anything with my hands, I found. So mm. I garden all the time in good weather. And one of the things that I'm meticulous about is I have all these rose plants all around our house. And so deadheading roses, going out and clipping off all those while I'm just going around and looking and managing. I will say I did get rather frustrated when a AC repairman trampled a lavender plant that I had really babied to come to life. And I may or may not have said, do you have any idea how hard that is to grow? I wish I would have said it in that calm a tone, but I will confess, it's funny, I never yell in a rehearsal, but by God, if you step on a lavender plant, you're going to get the wrath. So
that's the name of your gardening podcast. Do yes. you know how hard that is to grow? A gardening podcast with Luke Fraser.
Yes. You know, but I'm the type, I cover with burlap my plants out in the garden, the ones that should
yes.
get the temperature.
You're so and good.
It's our musician life, but I love it because I'm just out there with my hands. And again, you realize, guess what? This is the only thing I can control today.
That is such a good point.
I can make sure this little gardenia plant's going to open up in the spring and have a great life. And I can do that today. And I can worry about these other things later.
Yep.
One of the other things I love is the poetry of Mary Oliver.
Oh, God.
I find that her poetry is all about coming back to where we are here and now today. And actually, at our wedding, we used a reading from Mary Oliver.
I think she invokes mindfulness in people without them realizing that it's asking them to be mindful. And yes. I love that, because it's just an accessibility point. In fact, what you're talking about right now, it's that mindfulness piece, whether it's working in your garden or cooking a meal. And immediately when we get into that space, it can calm us down from all of the stuff that we can't control. And I've thought about this a lot too. All we can do is make the community that we are in just a little bit better. If we can focus on that, that is how we affect change in a greater way.
Of
you know,
course.
I was just thinking about it this way. There's that balance of staying informed and understanding. So if we want to put it back into orchestral world, there's that knowledge about where we are, where we need to go, understanding what the problems are. But again, on a grander scale, there's only so much control we yeah. have over the decisions that are being made. And so you take that knowledge and you just filter it into the decisions you make in your own world, in that own sphere of influence that you have. I think the world would benefit greatly from everybody taking that on in their lives, because everyone has some sphere of influence. Even if it's your own family, even
of
if
course.
It's your children, this idea that you can just plant some seeds of positive evolution, what that does for other people, it's big.
Well, it's that we are all on that daily journey, whether we care about the environment, we decide to make sure and recycle those things. And it sounds like such a mediocre thing. Or for me, I'm a vegetarian. And I do think about, like, it's fun to just realize I'm not adding to fossil fuels
yes.
via meat processing. Like, I actually
yes.
think about that stuff. Or just being nice to someone
yes.
in the grocery store at the checkout and just being nice to that person and acknowledging mm-hmm. them and looking them in the eyes. And realizing that you see them and you respect the work they're doing, you just never know if it's going to make a difference in their life or just pick them up. But you do what you can, and you get pissed off when you need to get
yep.
pissed off. We all do. And sometimes you just need that in life. For me, I also am a huge history mm-hmm. fan. So more frequently than not, like right now I'm reading two different presidential biographies, two different parties, mm-hmm. two different eras. And you realize that so much of our current climate, everything old is new again. This is, we've been here before. Mm. There are interesting ways that in the past they've handled this.
A duel.
A duel.
And by the way, I don't always agree completely with one side or the other. There's things you can take from both of these ideas and then mix them together, and you find that there's
Yes.
an interesting way, which again, to tie back to orchestras, is that it's not all pop shows, it's not all classical shows, that we can find a middle ground and we can all grow and rise and.
I love that so much. Sounds so radical, but it's so
Right.
practical. Putting half pops, half classical concert.
Yes.
What are we doing?
Because guess what? They always the response I get back when I say things like that, what will our subscribers think? What will our
They'll
bread
be
and
like,
butter?
finally.
Do you know I had somebody say to me, and this is a direct quote, a longtime supporter of an organization outside of DC that I was working with, who gives a ton of money to that organization, pulled me in and said, I can't thank you enough. This is the first orchestra concert I've enjoyed in 30 years. They felt like they had to write a check because it was the local symphony. It was what they think was the right thing to do. The program was a mixed program of classical and popular. This bridge that we can create right now, as we see a transition, we need to all be killing ourselves to build that bridge. That's the world I live in every day, is I always want to be curious to improve. And I want to make sure that I maintain that energy in an ensemble as well, that we maintain a curiosity. We don't get too set in ways, that we can be flexible and creative and innovative. And I do think that's the future. And I do think that we will get there. That old lady told me it was the first time in 30 years she enjoyed the concert. I hope she actually does go tell the people in charge that that was the case. And not for my career, because don't hire me back or not. But I would love to get on that group's website and look in a year and say, they listen to her. They listen to this person.
It's amazing to see that you are planting these seeds and they're sprouting in other places. And now you're going to be doing more guest conducting and more influencing of organizations. It's just really exciting to see where that leads in the culture of what we do for a living. So I'm very, very grateful that we have been able to get to know you from the ground up, you know? Like, it's really cool.
And it's certainly been a journey, and I have learned a ton along the way, and my own philosophy and approach has evolved over the way. And for me, I think as players, as conductors, as audience, you got to find your tribe and blend in there. And then you're going to make great music.
All the full body nod.
Or a body roll, as one of all our
Oh,
favorite singers
yes.
likes to do in performances.
Oh my gosh. So I'm reminded about that very singer and an anecdote that you told us. It might have been while we were on tour recording for
Yeah.
PBS of a very formative experience that you had in the land of beauty pageants.
Yeah.
And I was curious if you would tell our listeners that story because I really thought it spoke to like your authenticity in difficult situations.
You know what's so funny, guys? This is what orchestral auditions
This
are.
is all coming
I
full
mean, it's
circle.
like,
Can I just tell you? It's
seriously.
a beauty
I
pageant.
mean, seriously, we train and we have people that coach us on the right way to audition and the right pieces to play for the audition. So, how is this much different than going in and people judging you solely on what other people think you should look like? I mean, most orchestral auditions are based on you're trying to read the mind of what someone else, how you should sound. What? Nonsense. So again, like, hello, change our audition format. By the way, for APO auditions, I don't look at any resume. The other thing with APO, I refuse because, again, hello, they all say, we're not biased to where you went to school. Nonsense. And the only thing I knew coming in is what instrument they were auditioning on. The very first thing they did was sight read. Because here's the thing, you spend all your time practicing your excerpts or practicing your solo piece, and someone's sitting behind that screen with their firm opinion of what those pieces should sound like. And for me, I want to hear if you're musical and you have a beautiful sense of your tone, whatever your instrument is. And then after that, then I'll hear what you prepared. But if you don't play that musically, I don't even listen to the other stuff. So back to beauty pageants. So we walk in, and there's this culture of in order to be a winner in a beauty pageant, you have to have this kind of hair, this kind of makeup, this kind of this, that, or the other. And you people can watch Toddlers and Tiaras. And I will say from my one time judging a beauty pageant, it is exactly the way that show portrays it. It is exactly accurate. I have this friend from college who was desperate for a judge and said, would you come in and judge this thing? And I assumed, okay, I'm coming in as the talent judge. Well, it turns out there was no talent component of said pageant. So there I am with no pageant background and particularly dowdy in attire. And I'm having to tell these people who's the quote, most beautiful. Outrageous to me. So I'm having this existential crisis as I roll up to an elementary school gym. And like, what am I going to be doing with this? Like, what's happening in my life right now? And so I decided right then and there, you know what I'm going to judge any kid on? If they genuinely seem to be having a great time being a ham on stage. I don't care what you look like. I don't care how much money you spent. If you walk out there and you own that stage and you're a ham, you're going to get my top score. And so that's exactly how I adjudicated. I had two other judges, my brother, who was in town from England, I mean, who now is a PhD professor at a university in England and a Cambridge Book Press deal for Anglo-Saxon history. Like this, we're classic beauty pageant judges. And then another conducting student friend of mine, and we are the panel. And we all agreed, like, this is revolting, that there is nothing deeper than superficial. So let's make it about your personality. So we all scored, and all these kids won that have never won any pageant. Some of them have never even been in a pageant, but they had a hell of a time. And we literally had to leave via the back door because the culture was so toxic and so vicious that the pageant director said, "You can't go out the front doors. You're going to have a problem." So, by the way, the other thing, my pay for this, I didn't even get money. I got a fleece blanket and an off-brand Yankee candle from CVS, and that was my payment. But I have this story for a lifetime. And so, God willing, I'll never have to judge a pageant again. But if I do, rest assured, I'm going to be me when I pull out that score
I
sheet.
love that. I love that so
I forgot
much.
about the off-brand Yankee candle gift.
Oh, it was, you know, one of those cinnamon apple kind that pretty sure I got
Yes.
cancer from just lighting it.
Yep. Oh
It
my
was real
gosh.
classy, that one.
Oh, Luke, thank you so much.
This has been just so delightful and fun to talk with you in this way. I certainly feel energized.
Well, I hope so.
Always.
Yes, we love it.
Thank you guys so much.
We love you. Thanks for being with
Thank you,
us.
Luke. We love you. Thank you so much for listening today. And thanks also to our season two sponsors, ArcRest and Potter Violin.
Another thanks to Alto Clef Gifts, where you can purchase Violacentric shirts and mugs and a variety of other fun items featuring our beloved Alto Clef.
The Violacentric theme music was written and produced by JP Wogeman and is performed by Steph and myself. You can support our future episodes by supporting our sponsors through our PayPal link or Venmo, and by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. And please consider sharing your favorite episodes with your music-loving friends.
Thanks again for listening. Let's talk soon.